Grace and mercy, peace and joy be yours in our Lord and our Savior, Jesus Christ. He is risen. So when I was a child, I was brought up in the church, went to Easter services every year. I still remember the one year when my father was driving us to the sunrise worship service, which is, by the way, when I decided I never wanted to go to one of those again and have been to many since. We were driving down the road, and my dad, who was so excited about Easter, decided that he was going to honk the horn all the way down the street so that people who were sleeping would know that Jesus had risen. I don't think that's the best way to share the good news. So that's what I grew up with, but when I became a teenager, after confirmation was all over, I really drifted far from the faith and didn't have anything to do with the church for a long time. And during those years, I sometimes wondered what I really believed. I didn't know if I believed or didn't believe. Maybe you could describe me best as an agnostic Christian, an unsure one, a doubtful one. There were times I was sure Jesus was around, and other times I didn't even know if he existed. By the way, as an aside, the fact of Jesus' existence is proven all through the history. It's not a question that's up in the air. Only people who want to attack the Christian faith would ever even make the ludicrous arguments from history that he is so obviously part there. Even the Romans talk about Jesus in their writings. Jesus was here. Well, sometime in my early 20s, I wandered back to the church. Jody always tells me, my wife Jody always tells me I came to her church. She wants to keep that straight for us. And I did. I came to her church, and there I rediscovered my faith. And it was a weird kind of journey for me. I was a scientist in genetics, and I needed to have things proven to me and to be on a journey that included something you couldn't prove was difficult for me. Until, and I don't know exactly when it happened, but until I realized you could prove that Jesus had risen. It's not an article of faith so much as an acknowledgement of history that Jesus rose from the dead. We'll get into what it means to believe in the resurrection in a little bit. But right now, I want to look at this passage and pick up on some things for you. Okay, so if you have your own Bible, we'll be looking at Mark 16. It'll come up on the screen for you if you want to follow along that way. So what has happened is Jesus was crucified on the night before, or the day before the Sabbath. He's been laid in the tomb just before the sun went down, because it was real important to get bodies into the graves before Sabbath began with the sun down on Friday. So now the Sabbath is past, and very early in the morning, apparently, Mary Magdalene, Mary, the mother of James, and Salome go to town, or they're in town. They're probably someplace in Jerusalem at that time, and they've gone to get some spices. Now, they're going to anoint Jesus' body. They saw that already Joseph of Arimathea has anointed Jesus' body with, get this, are you ready? 75 pounds of spices have already been put on him. Maybe they want to do more, I'm not sure, but they're going to do that. That's the Jewish way of preparing a body for everlasting burial. And so they've bought their spices. Now it's really early, and now the sun's coming up, and they come to the tomb, and they're saying to each other, who's going to get rid of this big stone? So now to understand that a little bit, it's an interesting thing, the way that Jewish tombs were made. In fact, maybe all through the ancient Near East, but I know for sure Jewish tombs were like this. Okay, so think of my face as the hole, all right? And in front of the hole, that you know, like the cave or whatever, there was a slanted thing like this, a groove in the ground, okay? And before they buried anybody, on this side of the upper level of the groove, they would put a huge boulder, and they'd keep it in place inside the groove. The boulder would fit the groove really well. They would put a little stone, big enough stone, to hold it in place. Okay? Then they would put the body in, and then they would remove this stone. And this, because it was in a groove and it was designed to do this, the whole stone would go down the groove and kind of more or less go thunk into place. And it would take literally, and I mentioned this in the early service, that when so often when people say literally, they mean metaphorically. I mean literally, it would take 3 to 4 men to move that stone again. Because they had not only the extreme weight of the stone to deal with, but they also had to roll it back uphill. Years and years ago, I was working on a pool in our backyard, and we had the idea of putting some boulders around, and I got these little boulders, and I thought that would be no big deal, just roll them. Oh my goodness. I had to get 2 other guys from the neighborhood to help me, and there were little boulders. And we're talking about big, huge stones that would cover the grave. So the women are really concerned, you know, how are we going to, we want to anoint his body, you know, how are we going to get in there? And they look up, and it's gone. When you read the Gospel of John, it's not only gone, but it's not only in the sense that it's been taken off, I mean, you know, from in front, but it's actually been removed out of the groove, and it's lying flat on the ground in front of the grave. Why? Why would the stone be removed? Jesus is God in human flesh. Later on, we know he stood in the upper room with the disciples, and the doors were all locked, and he was right there in the midst of them. He doesn't need a stone to be moved. Why was the stone moved? It's important that we see what's not inside. It's essential for the women to be able to go inside that tomb and see that there's no body. The stone is removed for them, not Jesus. So they do. They enter into the tomb, and there's a young man sitting on the right side, dressed in white robe, heavenly messenger. There's no human who can tell them what happened. So God sent a messenger from heaven. And they're alarmed. I've never seen an angel, but I imagine I would be alarmed too in seeing an angel, the holiness of heaven all around them. And the angel said to them, "Don't be alarmed. You seek Jesus of Nazareth, who was crucified." Interesting thing about the crucified thing, you know, the way that the angel says this, he was crucified, he says it in a way that indicates he remains crucified. It's not like it happened, it's over, and it's finished, and that's that. No, he remains crucified forever. Alive, having overcome crucifixion, he's still crucified. When you see him, you will see the nail holes of his crucifixion. He will always carry those scars. I don't know if we do, if we carry the scars that we have from surgeries and falling and all that stuff. I have no idea if we do. But the Son of God forever will be the crucified one. And he will stand in heaven always as a testimony with his scars before you of how deep and how great and how amazing his love is for you, that he would be crucified for you. Not only would he endure nail holes, not only would he endure the spear through the side, not only would he endure all of the beatings, 39 lashes, which was designed by the Romans to just get you this close to dying, but you wouldn't die. Not only would you see all of, would he have all of that having happened, but when you see those nail holes, you see the price he paid, the darkness of the day, the forsakenness of God. You see God saying, you who have become sin incarnate on that cross, away from me. You always see that in heaven. But this one who was crucified, he's not here. He has risen. Look where they put him. But go and tell his disciples, he's going before you to Galilee, and there you will see him, just as he told you. It's not enough just to see the empty tomb that day. They're going to see him alive as well. He had promised them. He said, I'm going to be crucified, and then I'm going to be put in the ground, and then I'm going to come back alive. And when I do, he said, I'll meet you in Galilee. And so the angel's reminding them of that. They didn't believe it. I've often wondered what they thought when he said those words. You know, hey, you guys, you know, I'm going to be crucified. I'm going to die. You're going to put me in the ground, and 3 days later, I'm going to come back alive. I wonder if they said, But he meant it. And he didn't mean it metaphorically, he meant it literally. He would be alive, and they would see him. Well, some of them see him that night. Mary Magdalene sees him just a few hours later. The other women on their way from the tomb see him. Thomas and the disciples again see him a week later. He's seen by many, 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 many people. In fact, at one point, probably in Galilee, he was seen by 500 people or more at the same time. He was alive, and he showed himself. It's not just enough to see the empty tomb, you see him alive. They haven't yet seen him, so they fled out from the tomb, for trembling and astonishment had seized them, and they said nothing, for they were afraid. Now, the interesting thing is, this is where Mark ends his gospel. If you get an English version of the gospel today, you'll see other endings. There's two other. There's called the short other ending and the long other ending. But you go way back to the early church in just as, you know, decades after Jesus rose from the dead, and they talk about the Gospel of Mark. They say those weren't part of Mark. Verse 8 is the end. There's a lot of debate about when Mark was written. Some think he wrote his the first gospel. And that's what I was taught when I went to the seminary. There's quite a bit of new evidence that there's a good chance he actually was one of the last writers of the gospels. But either way, I'm kind of going toward that he was one of the last ones now, because of the way he ended it. But either way, here's why he ended it the way he ended it. And this is, for you, a huge question. Are you going to leave with fear and trembling? Or are you going to receive the news he is risen with joy? Which way is it going to be for you? You see, we can talk about what we know. We know he rose from the dead. It's a fact of history. You can look at it as a fact of history for a lot of different reasons. One is, look at the disciples themselves, how they changed after they saw him. Even on Sunday, the day of resurrection, even after they'd been told he was alive, they were terrified. And they were behind closed doors. They locked the doors because they were afraid of the Jews. What was going to happen if they killed him? Aren't they going to come after us, his disciples? After they saw him, they're out in the streets. And they're telling people, he's risen. He's alive. They completely did a 180. And almost every one of them died for their faith, and almost every one of them were given a chance to recant and refuse to. No, because they saw him alive. It would be ludicrous to say he didn't come back alive. They knew he had. He's God. Why would they deny him? But look at the Jewish people. If you look at the numbers of people who became disciples of Jesus Christ in the first 2 to 3 years after his resurrection, it is truly a phenomenal number of people. Hundreds of thousands became what we would call Christians. They were already Christians because a Christian is someone holding on to the Messiah. They were holding on to the promise of the Messiah before he came, and now they're holding on to the reality of his finished mission. Hundreds of thousands in a few short years. Why? Well, they had relatives who saw Jesus alive. They had all kinds of people they trusted, friends, relatives, moms, dads, children. And they knew these people weren't crazy. They knew that Jesus came back alive. And they put their trust in him. I made a big point about it this morning. The linen cloths that Jesus was covered in, they always would put spices on them first, on the bodies, and then they would wrap the cloth all the way around them, their legs, their torso, and then it's something separate, a different head cloth they would put on them. And John points out that when the women went into the tomb, John and Peter went into the tomb, they noticed particularly the linen cloths were laid aside and the head cloth actually folded. And it says, right then, and they believed. Something about those linen cloths. You know what it was? When you put spices on a body and then wrap it with cloth, the spices act as a glue. And you can't pull the cloths off once that glue dries. And yet there they were, intact, before the very eyes of the disciples. For me, that was the turning point. That was where, when I realized, oh, he really did rise. I know he rose. You can't do that with those linen cloths anyway. The only way is he had to miraculously come out of those cloths as the Son of God he is. So we know he rose from the dead. The ending of Mark asks the question, more than what you know, do you trust him? Do you trust that his resurrection changes your destiny? Do you trust his words where he said, I am with you always, even to the end of the age and beyond? Do you trust his words that he said, in my Father's house are many rooms. I'm going there to prepare a place for you. And if I go to prepare a place for you, I will come back to take you to be with me, that you may be where I am and I may be where you are. Do you trust the words? Do you trust what he said? If you know he rose from the dead, it opens up a whole world of trust in God. That he is not going to count my sins against me. No, he's forgiven them. He's put them away. And whatever would keep me out of heaven is gone forever. In fact, there's even a place already prepared for me. And I'm using the me words, but I'm not just talking about me. It's you too. You can face anything in this world if you face it with the living Jesus. You can face your death if you face it with Jesus. In fact, you can go to your grave with joy. Because God is actually taking what should be a bitter, terrible end and turning it inside out and upside down and making it a place where you are made new forever when he calls you out of that grave. And now you have life not only with him in spirit, but in body as well. Forever. So you see why we get excited on Easter Sunday? Want to rattle those? Okay, so I'm going to put you under a test right now. Are you ready for the test? I'm going to say the words. Let's see what you do with them. He is risen. Hey, that's pretty good. You know, most often I really tease congregations because I come and I say things like that, and here's what usually happens. I say, he's risen! See, I didn't even do that, did I? I see, I was kind of tempting you. And usually what I hear back is, yeah, he's risen indeed. This is the most astounding thing that has ever happened in the history of mankind. It changes everything. It changes you. There's nothing more exciting than that Jesus is alive. You want to say it that way? He is risen. He is risen. Hallelujah.